Welcome to the Hope Show, or Gabfest maybe. 45 years of punk rock. I'm sitting here, Michael Murphy's on the other end, and we're going to talk about punk rock. Last week we started with 1976, so we're going to have a little chat about all these songs from 1977. 10 songs we picked tonight, 10 songs that mean something to us, and 10 songs that defined, I suppose, that punk rock era of 1977. So Michael, you're very welcome.
Thanks a lot, Noel. Brilliant to be here, and thrilling to be talking about 1977 and the music and the singles of it.
I know, it's great, isn't it? You know, like punk rock was kind of 76, I suppose, the starting point, but for me, it's kind of 77, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. 77 was when it really, you know, came into my life. And to be honest, I probably have more singles from 1978 or 79 even.
Yeah, yeah.
That I cherish. But I can look back and see 1976, something happened that was a complete, you know, change in culture. And in 1977, the fruits of that were clear to see to everyone. And it wasn't obscure. This wasn't like some, you know, rave music in its early days. These were on the charts. Yeah. These were top 10 singles.
This is like, it's like nearly an episode of Top of the Pops here tonight, isn't it, from 77?
Very much so.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. Should we get straight into the song? First song then, will we? We'll just play it and we'll have a chat about it afterwards. This is The Adverts, Gary Gilmore's Eyes. Stopped there earlier. It stopped there in 3 seconds to go for some reason. Anyway, that was Gary Gilmore's Eyes, The Adverts, Michael. What a great song. And we've seen TV Smith and we've seen The Adverts, him, TV Smith, playing The Adverts and playing that first album in recent years. But it's so good, isn't it?
It's an extraordinary piece of art. I think it's an extraordinary song. But as a piece of social commentary, it's beyond that. It's beyond perfect for capturing the time. And people think, oh, punk rock was about complaining about things and we don't like this, we don't like that. This song is about someone getting a transplant. And that makes you think, God, what was going on in medical science in 1977? You know, that the idea of a transplanted organ could become a little 3-minute horror film in this really energetic, frantic, exciting, but quite scary song. So I will never, ever forget the times that I spent when I first came across this song. And once again, it was my brother had the single, and just the abject fear that I had that, God, that could happen to anyone. You know, that you're just innocently, you're in hospital and the patient must be in hospital because they can't see. Wouldn't it be great if they could see? Oh, and they're getting an eye transplant. They'll be able to see. Oh no, they've got the eyes of someone who was a murderer.
And then what
does the patient do? You know, they barricade themselves in the hospital room. It captures the paranoia that I think a lot of us felt listening to punk, and that punk actively, you know, encouraged paranoia, I think, because it was about saying, that's not right, and it'd be scary if this goes any further. So we should start thinking. And then, you know, to quote you, if you've got something to be angry about, you've got something to change. And I think this is a masterpiece of cultural criticism.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. And that album, that Cross the Red Sea album, is just a classic. I remember being in work back in the whenever that was, you know, and we had a tape machine, you know, tape recorder, and on one side was Crossing the Red Sea, and listened to it, you know, a couple of times a day, because we only brought a couple of tapes in. There was three of us in the job, and one of us, we all had a go, our own spot on the tape recorder, you know, so we could play one tape each, and this was my tape, and just the album, played it to bits. It's just an incredible, the whole album is incredible, but like you say, that's single. And I remember, well, I don't remember 77 really, but I remember watching and seeing them on Top of the Pops as well. And it must have been, I don't know how much later it was, but like just going, these are just brilliant. This is a great band. So good.
Yeah, I completely agree. And to me, it was very important, and not to objectify anyone, but it's very important that it was men and women on the screen or in the photograph. I thought that was one of the really exciting and relevant things about punk.
Yeah.
Was that it wasn't just four lads up in their flares and long hair or with short hair. That it was saying that this movement is more than just lads together.
Yeah.
I think it was I think people don't realize how significant the adverts were at the time. And as you said, now TV Smith has continued to make brilliant music for 45 years, if we're looking back.
Yeah. No, it's great. Great. And then our next song is someone else who's been playing music for 45 years and he's still playing. Now it was The Attractions then was the band that he was playing with. I suppose it's kind of moved on a little bit. We've got different musicians, but Elvis Costello, you know, we mentioned briefly before the show started, I was telling you, I was reading the Steve Jones book, but you know, from the Pistols, and kind of going, I don't know if I'd be hanging around with this guy back in whenever, you know, and what he's talking about, yet they kind of were leading the charge. But I think they only led it very briefly. They might have pushed the wall and then the rest of the bands came in and broke the wall down, like the Clash or whatever. But Elvis Costello, so intelligent, the songs again, and you know, kind of touching people as well, you know, with his music. And it wasn't just like, you know, as you were mentioning, it wasn't just Smash the System or whatever. It was like intelligent music. So so we've got Watching the Detectives next. What do you think of Elvis Costello?
Oh, I think he's one of the great songwriters. Like I'll put him up there with the people who wrote Elvis's hit songs, with the people who wrote you know, musicals in the 1940s and the 1950s. I just think he's a brilliant composer. You know, what to me, Elvis Costello is a high point of civilization, as strange as that sounds, that we were, as a, you know, as a group of individuals interacting collectively, that society generated someone with this ability to combine music and lyrics that are not expected, but every one of them is very well measured, very, very weighed. I think Elvis Costello's body of work is up there with some of the people who are regarded as icons of English literature are great authors. Yeah, yeah. And this song, again, like the adverts, it's not, you know, I hate the world, let's smash it up. It's pulling you into a world. I think a lot of the best punk rock songs created a world and invited you in to see things through other people's eyes. And to me, that's empathy. And I think people forget that at the very, very heart of punk rock is empathy. It's about care. It's about consideration. And this is a brilliant, brilliant piece of pop writing.
Yeah, yeah. Sure, let's give it a listen. Watching the Detectives, Elvis Costello.
Her nails while they're dry.
So it fades and so it fades. Great song, though. And it got me thinking of I can't remember what year it was, maybe 1991 or something. Chumbawamba played the outdoor gig in Trinity before they played in the SFX that night with Fugazi. And so we were going around handing flyers. And I handed this fella a flyer, you know, and he says, "Oh, that looks interesting. I might go to that," in an English accent. And I kind of looked, kind of looks familiar. I wonder who he is. And then I went, "Oh, he's hanging out with Cacho Reardon." Turns out it was Elvis Costello. I don't know if he went to the gig or not, but I think it kind of, to me, it's like punk kind of changed things to make people more accessible, or people in bands more accessible. And obviously the next band we're going to play will be, you know, would have been leading the way there. Maybe Steve Jones and the Pistols may not have been, maybe they were, but that to me, the like the adverts, like TV Smitten, you go up, and like what you'd see at Rebellion even now, but Elvis Costello, they're just accessible. They're just people getting out there and playing music.
Extraordinary. And just going back to Elvis Costello for a second with Watching the Detectives, this was before music videos had the type of psychological impact that they have now, and that they had, you know, from MTV starts in 1981, and becomes a dominant force. So again, what's really important about punk and the best punk songs are that they were very visual. You know, I imagined seeing things because the lyrics were so brilliant. They were so precise. They were so concise. They communicated and conveyed so much. So to me, punk singles were little films, because they made videos, but you'd no chance of seeing the video except, you know, kind of the one in a thousand opportunity to see it on Top of the Pops or some children's television show.
Yeah. So we move on to The Clash. Now, last week we played the 101ers, and we spoke a bit about Strummer. You could nearly play The Clash every year, you know. Well, whatever year they had released music, they certainly would be featured there. So we'll play the song and we'll come back. I know we could probably talk for the whole show about The Clash. We'll try not to, but we'll play Complete Control by The Clash.
Oh,
Wow. Speechless.
Where was my word as well?
Yeah. I know. Do you know what I feel? It's like water's been pushing against the dam. Now the wall is after breaking and it's just exploded. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a great image, actually. This was, you know, maybe the Sex Pistols were chipping away at something and they were bright and breezy enough to cause a change. But if it was just the Pistols, it wouldn't have been a movement. It would have been great fun. But having the Clash as the next great group change punk forever, and I think meant that it could keep giving forever. And what a soundtrack for the dam getting burst open. Yeah,
I know.
And there's moments in that song where he sounds so upset that he can't speak. You know, that the words just won't come out properly. And yet there are other times in this song where it's so melodic. It's so well put together. And there's the beauty and the appeal and the mystery of punk together was that it can sound so messy and so precise at exactly the same time. I don't think any other type of music can do that.
No. No, I'm almost speechless, you know, because I'm just thinking, like, even I saw the Clash in the SFX, so missed the first time round and was completely blown away. And people say, no, that wasn't the Clash. And I'm like, Strummer was on stage. Of course it was. You know, sure, it wasn't the best lineup of the Clash, but, you know, the worst lineup of the Clash is Head and Shoulders above so many more other, so much more stuff. And just to hear those songs, it's, you know, I'll never, ever forget. And I know we've done the book and Great Gig Memories, and we talk about Great Gig Memories. And that was just, you know, just incredible. And the kind of, I don't know, the inspiration that you felt just by watching them was amazing. It's like you say, they were like a catalyst, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. The Clash are, isn't that phrase that things are bigger than the sum of their parts? So, you know, we heard Joe Strummer before the Clash and it was great, but it was nothing close to this.
Yeah.
And Mick Jones, like, I didn't know at the time, and I just thought, God, that's really funny. He shouted Guitar Hero. But the guitar playing was so intelligent and fun and engaging, and it pulled you into this world that the Clash, and I think it's called Breaking the Fourth Wall or something like that, where in a film, if the character stopped and said, hey, what are you looking at? Pointing to the audience. This song breaks down that barrier between the audience, even though it was a piece of plastic going round and round in our suburban home.
Yeah.
It broke down the barrier and said there are human beings and life isn't all hotels and glamour.
Yeah.
You know, we're compromised and you should know that you're listening to something that's compromised. I thought that was so thrilling and sad.
Yeah. But yeah, great. As I say, we can't keep talking about them for the whole show, so we'll move on. It feels kind of bad moving on, but we have to. And next song we've picked is The Radiators. And it's Television Screen. So maybe we just play it and we'll come back and have a chat about that, okay? Television Screen, The Radiators.
There is a man in a shiny suit. He's saying get them off the streets and into the schools. But he knows what he does. He's got a middle-aged spread and he could never understand what's going on in my head. I'm gonna get him tonight. I'll teach him a lesson, all right. I'm gonna suffocate it, pass it to the television screen. Cause I don't like what's going down. I'm gonna suffocate it.
it and the buck stops here.
Some people think...
You're on mute, Niall.
Bizarrely enough, I got a phone call during that, but, you know, anyway, I had to take it and we move on. It's another breath of fresh air, isn't it, that song?
Oh, absolutely. And to me, the Clash to the Radiators makes total sense. And to me, seeing Mick Jones getting up and playing that song, you know, on stage at the benefit for the poor Liverpool supporters who were killed at the match, seeing Joe Strummer on stage with the Pogues and Phil Chevron there, to me, it was two of the great punk bands colliding on stage. And this was extraordinary in Ireland, because in Ireland, you didn't ever question your elders. Your elders were your betters, even if you felt oppressed by them. There was a very, very long legacy of not challenging upwards in the system. And for an Irish band, this was a hell of a statement. And it was a very, very precise critique of things that were happening in Dublin. I love the reference to the Blank Generation that we heard last week in 1976. This was Dublin talking to the punk scene in the States and to the punk scene in Britain, but saying, you know, we're not like you. You know, we're different because of where we're from.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's an interesting take on it. I hadn't really even thought about it in that perspective. I was just thinking that they're Dublin's Clash, but they were a great band, and you know, in some ways it's a pity that they didn't go on to release too many more. Well, it didn't keep going for too much longer, a couple of years. But also didn't seem to get the, I suppose they get the credit amongst people like ourselves who love music, but they don't seem to, I don't think they get the credit that maybe they deserve, you know, because you can put that song up on any other song on the show tonight.
Yeah, it was extraordinary that some, you know, granted we had a couple of acts like Thin Lizzy who we heard, like Horse Lips, like Rory Gallagher, who, you know, did well. They made successful records. But we were never in there at the very, very start of a music movement. So it's thrilling that the Radiators got in there very, very early on and kind of planted a version of Young Ireland in there in the punk revolution as it was in 1977. And then obviously the Boomtown Rats had huge commercial success. But we never ever were close to the start of a youth movement ever.
Yeah.
So this was remarkable.
Yeah, no, great. And as you say, the lyrics of the Radiators and the things they were singing about, you know, for Ireland back in 1977, you know, it was trying to bring some colour into that, into the grey streets and the black and white of Ireland. And really, really important band. Well, we move on to the next one. We'll go with, we played a song. We'll have a chat about it afterwards. This is X-Ray Specs, O Bondage Up Yours.
Some people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think, O Bondage Up Yours! 1, 2, 3, 4!
Bondage,
What a great start. What a great line at the start, Michael. Some people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think, oh, bondage up yours. Brilliant, isn't it?
Extraordinary. Like, is how many songs have such a strong, powerful opening couple of seconds?
Yeah.
And if this wasn't, you know, the BBC news reader's voice, this wasn't someone who'd gone to elocution lessons, who were the type of people you might hear speaking on television or radio or on records. This was frantic and ferocious and full of attitude, and it was thrilling. And, you know, you mentioned the Sex Pistols, and obviously Malcolm McLaren was a major force in kind of what they were connected with, and his shop Sex with all the kind of the bondage gear and stuff. So I've always thought that this was a very, very clever answer to Malcolm McLaren and that whole idea of bondage. And it was a young woman saying, no, no, no. And unapologetic. And to have that so early in a youth movement, a woman saying, you know what? There's someone who's really important in this movement. I'm not going to name Malcolm McLaren and then Vivian Westwood. And I'm absolutely rejecting what they stand for. Absolutely extraordinary. I think it's a brilliant song on every level. Would particularly be a different song if it was a man's voice.
Yeah, yeah. And I know we often say, you know, punk gave a voice to voiceless, or a voice to people who, you know, didn't feel they could be in bands. Like, I do firmly believe that. I know there was bands before punk, and I know there was people doing their own thing. But this was kind of the movement that they could be part of. And this showed young women, yeah, get up there on stage. It's all good, you know. And we don't have to listen to, you know, the stereotype version of what people say we should be to be in a band. We can just get up there and we can be just the same as everyone else. It's great.
Yeah, that what a perfect punk name. Polystyrene.
Yeah.
It was so modern. It was so futuristic. It was plastic. And, you know, with all that techno fear, I think it was, people don't remember how much fear there was about technology and what that might do to us. But that was an absolute thrilling piece of vinyl.
Yeah.
That early single.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, we move on next to the next one is The Damned. Again, we'll play it. We'll have a listen and we'll chat about it. This is Neat, Neat, Neat by The Damned.
Can't be found a way at all. I'm just a man, can't stand by.
Damned. Neat. I was listening to I think it was Government Issue during the week, and I was just kind of thinking about the influence that the Damned had on on bands like that. So the I'm sure we'll evolve into this over the next few weeks. You know that you know there's the UK sound and the bands from the UK get over to America and there's you know some influence in the early hardcore and then that comes back to the UK. But I think the Damned were really influential in that early American hardcore sound.
Yeah, I think what a vital important band, what an essential band, and they're the band that put humor into punk. I don't think you'd have the SoCal movement with you know all of the really funny bands like you know I think of someone like NoFX who can be deathly serious but can be really funny and really on the border of what's acceptable as well. And I think the Damned were the joker in the pack of the original of the big original punk bands in Britain. And I think because of that, I think they got seen maybe unfairly as being a novelty, but their songs are put together and speedy, zippy, full of life, vibrant, and funny as well. And why can't you have it all? And to me, the Damned were saying that you can put everything, even things that shouldn't go together on a single.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, like say a UK comparison later on is like Snuff, isn't it? You know, that they're kind of funny, but they're still a very serious band and they're very good musicians. But yeah, like that, you know, Smash It Up and Neat, they're like so good.
Yeah. Fantastic band. Love them.
Yeah. Great stuff. So next up is Wire 12XU. We play that and we'll have a little chat. Okay, this is Wire 12XU.
All right. Here it is again. And it's called 12XU!
Niall, that's the first hardcore single.
Yeah.
You know, we're only in 1977 and it's a band who don't sound like that on any of their other songs.
Yeah.
So a band that had a huge range, but to me, that's the very, very first hardcore 7-inch single.
Yeah. I was about to say something similar. I was going to make reference because I said the Damned earlier, but really that is that kind of sound, doesn't it? And when you think of the kind of music that Wire and then subsequent Gang of Four went on to influence and people making music. But yeah, like that song is just like short, sharp bang, isn't it?
Yeah, it's under 2 minutes. There's no fat in it, to use a horrible expression. You know, there's no waste in it. Yet, even though it's so short and so shocking, there's still time at the start for this lad, you know, with an English accent to speak.
Yeah.
So there's a huge range of that fast, slow, quiet, loud that I think becomes the template, not just for punk, but for most of the interesting non-dance music for the next 45 years. It's all the ingredients are there. Just look at what we've played, Niall. And all of the ingredients, all the seeds that are been planted for young people for people of any age.
Yeah.
To say,
yeah,
go on, have a go.
Yeah. And there's another good seed coming up next. We'll move on to it. In the City, The Jam. This is it now. That's The Jam, In the City. And it was like almost like a love-hate relationship with punk rock, isn't it, with The Jam? They're like the clean version of punk rock, but, you know, again, they were making sensible songs, bringing their lyrics out to, you know, a generation of people that, you know, maybe didn't hear this, like living out in wherever they're living in their suburbs and going, wow, this is a great sound here. I can, you know, really, really relate to what, you know, the likes of what Weller was saying, and while he was looking so cool and giving out about punk rock, really it kind of came. I know musically maybe not, you know, there's more going on in the music, but it comes from that punk rock thing, I think.
Yeah, a three-piece. Three young people were making this sound that was explosive and dynamic and could make you feel like you're in the middle of a city, even if you were living in suburban Ireland. And they didn't disguise the anxiety of what life in a city was like. To me, they're the ultimate outsider group, because they were outside the outside group that, you know, punk or whatever it was being labeled at the term. And they were a bit outside it, but they were making songs that had as much energy as the best of their contemporaries. They were young and, you know, the Clash line, they're dirty, they're filthy, they're never going to last, which I think is genuinely what those young bands must have felt. because there was so much hate directed at them. These people have contributed very meaningfully to culture, to British culture, to world culture, to Western civilization's culture for 45 years since people were saying, you're a joke, you're young, shut up, you've got nothing to say. Yeah. And, you know, when you think of Elvis Costello and Paul Weller's, you know, body of work, since they were branded as dirty degenerates who shouldn't be allowed play because they might, corrupt young people, who got the last laugh? And you can hear the start of that laughter right there.
Yeah. And I was thinking with the songs tonight, I played bass in a band, but the bass lines in so many of these songs are great. The next band especially, but even the Jam, that kind of that bass line, it's driving you along and it's really bringing you the sound. It's bringing you into their sound. It's just it's just great stuff.
Niall, because I'm not a musician, tell me what the bass, tell me about the bass playing in that song or Bruce Foxton's bass playing in general.
Well, it's kind of, it's high in the mix, and it's driving the sound. Many times it's his bass line driving it rather than say guitar line driving it. It's almost like the reverse, a lot of times the bass is just providing that kind of background rhythm, but he's out to the forefront in a lot of songs. And it's like that kind of, instead of a guitar line, with your little guitar solo, there's this like good bass riff driving it. But not in the kind of the dub way or the reggae way, just in a kind of, a pop way, but it was really strong in the sound. Now I didn't really like looking at him when he was playing his bass, cause the way he just kept moving his whatever way all the time. But, it's a really good, bass sound, that he has,
Terrific.
So, speaking of bass sounds, Stranglers, Jean-Jacques Burnel, it doesn't really get much better than him on the bass, but we'll play something better, Change, and we'll come back to it.
Enjoy it.
Well, change, something better changed, and something was changing, wasn't it? With this sound and these bands, these nine songs we played tonight, all from 77, something what really was changing, wasn't it? So, brilliant stuff.
Yeah, and is there a better ending to a song, Niall, than that? It's the most ferocious, intense, frantic, pulsing song. And then at the end, it's saying, we're making no apologies for having keyboard here.
Yeah.
Now, if they had been more mercenary-minded, or maybe if they thought differently, they'd thought, okay, let's be closer to the punk template. But even in this moment, and they were the most commercially successful of the bands that are labeled punk in 1977. They were, you know, the highest charted singles, highest charted albums. But they were still absolutely sticking their fingers right up your nose, saying, you know, like the Jam, this idea doesn't have to be confined to people who look in a particular way. I'd love that punk rock was ripped apart before it ever fully formed.
Yeah.
And that very, very rarely happens in culture.
Yeah.
And the Stranglers, God, they ruined punk. And they made punk so much better for rejecting so much of it very, very early on. I think they're an extraordinary band, and I think you could look at their run of singles and just see an outstanding body of work. But this was outrageous at the time, outrageously exciting.
Yeah. I think, you know, people talk about, you know, a punk sound or whatever. I think we've even shown tonight with those 10 songs so far, that or 9 songs so far, that it's hard to really define it as a sound, isn't it? You know, maybe it's the attitude that the people have who are playing the music that bonds them. But, you know, there's the Stranglers with the keyboards as well, you know, and then again, that bass sound, you know, it's kind of, I'm always thinking, God, you know, because people talk about No Means No and the bass sound of No Means No later on. I go, hang on a second. It's not Rush, you know, because there's a comparison between I don't even know who the bass player Rush is, but I'm sure he's amazing. And people were taught, you know, because they're Canadian, there's a link between No Means No and Rush. That's the bass sound. That's the exact sound that No Means No are having on their bass. Now, whatever about playing or whatever, but that, you know, it's just that driving the song as well, you know. Or driving the whole, like the Stranglers, like it was really great. And the way JJ, he had the bass down as low as possible, nearly at his knees, nearly opposite to Bruce Foxton, you know, right down, you know, looking great. It's interesting with the Stranglers, because they get a bit of stick, don't they, because of the keyboards. But, you know, like you say, stick their fingers right up their nose. They're not too concerned about the stick, which is the whole thing about punk rock. It's the old bondage up yours, isn't it? Some people say, you know, girls shouldn't be in a band, you know. So, it's that kind of, bands are almost better because of it.
Yeah. And the Stranglers were the first band that I really loved, that I also had things about them that I didn't like. You know, before I would have said that I had a bit of a pop brain and that pop loyalty that, oh, I like that singer, so I like everything they do and what they stand for. But with the Stranglers, there were things about them that I absolutely didn't endorse or didn't agree with. And yet, that might have led me to dismiss some other acts, but their music, their craft, their ability transcended any differences of opinion that I might have had with them. And that, to me, is a real test of strength.
Yeah. It's excellent. Okay, we've got one song left. We'll move it straight to play. I was going to talk about it first, but should we play it? And we'll have a little chat at the end. This is Gotta Get Out Tonight by The Runaways.
Of the night, I slip away, looking for some heavy action. No matter what it is, I get that little itch.
itch. My body needs satisfaction. Oh, I gotta get it out tonight.
That just that fade out. You don't have to, so many songs like that these days where they just fade towards the end, do you? But we were talking about this, getting the songs together for the show tonight, and the Runaways are the only band that we have played in 76 and 77. And I, you know, it's interesting that tells its own story, I think. And why did you kind of feel as well, Michael, that, you know, yeah, we got to leave them in for both years?
People forget how hardworking bands were in this moment. The Runaways had two albums. They put out two albums in 1977 and one in 76 and one in 78. So it wasn't even a full 24 months that they put out four albums. And they toured, you know, they not just in the States, but they toured in Europe as well. So, you know, to me, the reason that you can pick great pop songs, and to me, they're almost metal more than they're punk. But for female musicians and for a female vocalist in a rock band, I don't know if they would have been taken as seriously or embraced by the metal crowd, by the rock fans, if there hadn't been that cultural, you know, moment where loads of young people started going to gigs who hadn't gone to gigs before. Like, single sales rocketed in 1977 because they were so exciting. Like, there's no other way to explain it. It wasn't that suddenly young people had loads of money, but suddenly people thought that they had to own the records that were coming out of that moment. And, you know, to me, the Runaways, there's lots of things that concern me about them, even at the time, that I was a little uneasy with. But it was just compelling and exciting and extraordinary and liberating and hopefully for them and for most of the people they touch with. But talk about grafters.
Yeah, yeah. I think one aspect as well of the songs tonight that we've played, and the Runaways being a prime example, is how they influenced others. And you know, maybe they led the way. Maybe they were the shining light at the start. Maybe not. But how, you know, they were there and influencing others and saying, yeah, anyone can play in a band. Get up there, and it doesn't matter, man, woman, whatever. Just get up there and play in a band. Which to me, really says a lot.
Yeah, and you can hear it, you know, as we say, and it seems shocking every time I mention it. You know, it's 45 years. But you can still hear their influence. You can still imagine some of the bands that we would go and see and that love, you know, that we love that are young. And they absolutely must be studying the Runaways, and the Runaways must have been such a great incitement for people to think, but I'll do that. I'll pick up a guitar, and it's not going to be low. It's going to be turned all the way up.
Yeah. We're here to challenge you, or challenge your perceptions of what you think music should be. Yeah, it's great. Okay, well, that's 1977. That's 10 songs. That was good fun. Thanks very much.
Thank you. It was extraordinary. What fun.
What a great selection of music, though. That's just the amazing thing. So we get back next week, 78. We have to get our thinking caps on and see what we choose for 1978. So thanks very much, Michael.
All the best, Noah. Take care. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much.